2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies for driving you through this baking hot afternoon. It's Monday the 18th of July and this is Game On. Coming up today, Niall Moran and Owen Larkin on the Heroics in Croke Park as the Full House full-time roar returns to an All-Ireland hurling final.
Mikey Butler sweeps the ball in and the game is over. It's a two-point win for Limerick. Kilkenny gave it absolutely everything and they still came up short and Limerick have done the three in a row. Just the fourth county in GA history to do the four in a row in hurling and John Kiley is swallowed up by well-wishers. His backroom team come in to embrace him and to congratulate him on this landmark achievement. They've gone through three championships without losing a game. The green machine rolls on. It's King John's Castle in Croke Park. Limerick the champions.
In rugby, we've Stephen Farris and Bernard Jackman on heroic series win in Wellington for Andy Farrell's Ireland.
And it's Ireland who have beaten New Zealand to close out the series. I'll repeat it in case you didn't hear us the first time. Ireland have beaten New Zealand to clear out, to win out the series on a clear scoreline of Ireland 32, New Zealand 22. New Zealand belongs to Ireland.
It surely did. And in golf, Gary Murphy reviews the Open as Rory McIlroy ran out of holes to stop Cameron Smith's surge to victory.
You know, whenever you put yourself in that, you know, in that shining light, you're going to have to deal with setbacks and deal with failures. And today is one of those times, but I just have to dust myself off and come again and keep working hard and keep believing.
If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On 2FM.
So where do you start after that weekend? Only with a wow. I often scoff at the press and the media, of which I am one now, as they describe every weekend as Super Saturday, Super Sunday, Super Day, Super the other. But I went to bed last night thinking that was a super weekend of sport. The rugby team, well, they became believers when they stared down the All Blacks as they came back to probably snatch it or try and snatch it. But Ireland stood up and went on the attack. Over 82,000 people filled Croke Park to inspire Limerick and Kilkenny to give us a game of the ages. Brian Cody and John Kiley on the line, their passion was incredible compared to the balanced view of Andy Farrell sitting high up in the stand in the cake team, but cake tin even. But you also had Jessica Harrington, 7 years Brian Cody senior, winning the Judmont Irish Oaks with Magical Lagoon on Saturday afternoon. And of course at the end of it all, sport did what it always does, just takes that emotional edge off you and leaves you wondering what could have been, as Cameron Smith, I suppose, outputted Rory McIlroy. And it just took that little tinge of sadness as you watched Rory McIlroy walk off the 18th, having looked like the winner for so long. But where do you start? I suppose you start at the beginning, and that was Saturday morning with the rugby. And I'm delighted to be joined by Stephen Farris and Bernard Jackman to look back on Ireland's famous win. But before we hear from the two lads, let's remind ourselves of Saturday's third test as it played out here on 2FM.
Lana throw for Ireland, 5 metres short of the New Zealand line. On that far side of the pitch, yeah. Andrew Porter in, chatting to Dan Sheehan with the line on throw far side first, and then taken there by James Ryan, who's in and trying to defend. Yes. Ireland trying to attack forward here now, and they have got more momentum here. Ireland driving New Zealand towards the line as Ireland go charging forward. That in for the try! With the try, it's come within 4 minutes.
Just outside the 22-metre line, back to Jemison Gibson Park. Sexton moves it in, out the back door to Bundy. Sells a bit of a dummy there. He runs straight at Artie Savea. Brings play towards the 22. Away to the left-hand side, back at Mack Hansen. Zips it up, there's an opportunity to blow. Into the hat, he's flung back, he's charging for the line. In for the try! Far side of the pitch, Hugo Keenan came charging in. Side of the 22-metre line. As Ireland with swift hand,
have
unlocked the home defence. It's a second try for Ireland. 27 minutes gone.
And inside it goes, Bundy got it, this one,
Bundy there, the man is wrong,
it's a line-out throw for Ireland.
16 minutes remaining. 3 points between the teams. Ireland ahead 25-22. Rob Herring with the line-out throw. Pressure on him here now. 5 metres short of the New Zealand line. On this near side of the pitch, Ireland now with Kellen Dorris, but they've gone towards James Ryan. And they gather this one out and now try to swarm around New Zealand. Ireland have got firm momentum here now. The ball is under the arm of Rob Herring. Rob Herring gets into the try for Ireland. That's a perfect response. Rob Herring with the try. New Zealand unable to cope with the driving Irish ball on that occasion there. As they gather that one, he swarmed around the ball carrier. And there was Rob Herring. He found the man in the lineout. He found the try with the ball. It's a try for Ireland. Ireland have beaten New Zealand. New Zealand and Wellington belongs to Ireland. 10 points between the teams at the cake tin. It's Ireland who have beaten New Zealand to close out the series. I'll repeat it in case you didn't hear us the first time. Ireland have beaten New Zealand to clear out, to win out the series on a clear scoreline of Ireland 32, New Zealand 22. New Zealand belongs to Ireland.
New Zealand did belong to Ireland. It's hard to imagine Michael Cochrane never thought he would say those words. Thanks to Andrew O'Connor for putting that montage together. Stephen Ferris, if I start with you, I'm of a generation where I thought Ireland might win a game against the All Blacks at some stage. I never thought they'd win a series. Did you?
Brutally honest, no, I didn't. And I think I speak on behalf of a lot of Irish fans. But you know, after that second test, they give everybody a little bit of hope, but I just thought the All Blacks would come back fighting, and they didn't. And I think all the credit's got to go to Ireland. Like, they just played some sublime rugby, kept the ball alive, you know, took it to the New Zealand lads physically, and you know, all the pressure was on New Zealand in that third test, and Ireland just went out there, and you know, it was a masterclass in that first half. It really, really was. And you know, I didn't believe that they could ever do it, and I don't think, you know, going into this test series, that I would ever see Ireland win a test series down in New Zealand in my lifetime. But like, you know, because they're so good. Was it 1984 the last time they lost a series on home turf? So yeah, it was surprising to a lot of you know, the rugby fans across the world. But I tell you what, number one in the world, you know, I know there's the running joke, Ruby, of peaking before a Rugby World Cup, but you know, I think we're on the right track.
It would look that way to me. Bernard, I was sitting here on Saturday morning watching it with my kids, and my 11-year-old turned to me at half time and said, "Dad, I thought you said the All Blacks were the best. Were New Zealand that bad, or were Ireland just dominant over them?"
Look, I think New Zealand have problems, but Ireland, you know, exposed those problems in a ruthless way. In all three test matches, Ireland started really brightly, scored points, and the variety in how we took them apart was exceptional. And particularly, you know, the areas of the game where we've often struggled against the All Blacks. So line out maul, you know, it's traditionally very difficult to score against. And we scored 2 tries in the third test in that area. The way Ireland opened up holes in the New Zealand defence was exceptional, really well thought out, but also executed, playing at pace, as Stephen said, matching them physically. The All Blacks, whenever they've been beaten before, the following match, they bring unbelievable physicality. And they tried to do that, but they didn't bully us. And I think Ireland have made a massive step forward in terms of that ability to go toe-to-toe with teams. Now, there's another step again, the box in November and France, who are bigger than New Zealand. But this was a brilliant tour from an Irish point of view. And also, I know we're very focused on the test matches, but the youngsters, the younger group who were brought out there, they did very well to come back and beat the Maoris in the second game. And there's guys like, you know, Frawley, Craig Casey, Tom O'Toole, who've come out of the tour, maybe not playing in the test games, but have come out in big credit. So that's what Ireland needs to do. We needed to build depth, and there's some more depth there than there was going into this tour.
And we're always talking about depth and looking at the future, but for me, Stephen, what I loved was midway through the second half, the All Blacks have come out in the second half and go at Ireland, and they look like they're coming to get them, but there was that mental resilience to go back at them, to attack them. Where did that come from? Where did that belief come from? This wasn't a usual Irish performance.
I'd maybe disagree with you. I think we've seen a few performances like that from Ireland over the last couple of years. And, you know, they've got experience on the pitch. And it never, ever, even with that yellow card to Porter, you know, the New Zealand presser jumping all over it, saying it should have been a red card because of the incident the week before. You know, there is a strong argument there, of course, but it never felt like Ireland, to me, were going to lose that match. It just felt like they had their number. When Ireland were in possession, they always seemed to have numbers up. They always seemed to be able to get them short, get them on the edge. Their kicking game was better. You know, every box kick was seemed to be contestable, and Ireland were winning every 50-50. They were hungrier all across the pitch. And, you know, if New Zealand somehow had won that game, Ireland would have been robbed, because Ireland played the best rugby and every asset of play. And I think a lot of, you know, credit has got to go to the coaching staff in particular. I know the lads or the boys have to run out onto the pitch and, you know, put that blueprint into action that Andy Farrell, Mike Catt and the rest of the guys have laid down to them over the last, what, 9, 12, 15 months. But, you know, it's all coming to fruition now. And, you know, we were all getting on top of Andy Farrell and those guys in that stopgap tournament when, you know, we couldn't get anything going at all. There was just mistakes after mistakes. We didn't know what direction Irish rugby was heading. And then all of a sudden things have seemed to have clicked. So, you know, credit to all those guys. And it's brilliant for me as a fan, for Bernard, I'm sure yourself, Ruby. Like, I'm just so excited now about, you know, the next year and what's going to come and the expectation that comes with big wins against the All Blacks away from home. You know, this World Cup now can't come quick enough, can it?
No, I'd agree with you, it can't. But look, obviously performance anxiety was blamed for the last World Cup and Gary Keegan, a performance coach, was brought in. Having won a test down in New Zealand, Bernard, when they come back in the autumn, it is now the pressure of expectation. It's a different pressure. How do you think the lads will cope with that?
Well, look, that's where they want to be, and you know, they said this before in 2019, but they do seem to have better tools to handle it. But more importantly, they've got more ways of playing. So I think the reality is, in 2019, we were very easy shut down. We had two or three parts of our game which were, you know, the fundamentals of it, and we weren't allowed to do anything else. And that worked in 2018 and got us to number one in the world. Whereas you look at now, obviously we're number one in the world again, but you would have to say that we have more strings to our bow. And when the All Blacks came at us, as you said, in that second half, you know, we were able to find some of those bows and throw them and fire them, and it worked, and we built a score again. So I think, you know, Gary Keegan, we heard it with Caroline Currid yesterday with Limerick, it's built up over time, that understanding of what tools you use when the pressure comes on, how you handle being number one. Limerick have found a way to handle this and obviously win three in a row. And, you know, Gary Keegan and Andy Farrell and Johnny Sexton and Peter Manny, etc., they'll be doing everything in their power and using all the experience they have to make sure that we become comfortable being number one. But I think, you know, you look at that team, that's where they've worked hard to get there, and now they want to embrace that pressure. And the box coming, I know the box weren't great against Wales in the last 3 weeks, but the Springboks, world champions, beat the British and Irish Lions, coming to Dublin in November, Australia coming to Dublin in November, we'll get tested again, and that's really important.
That is the beauty of rugby, you're always going to get tested, Stephen. And when you look at the Irish setup, do you look at any one area or position in particular, do you think we need one or two more players there to last us out, or are you happy with the depth that Bernard spoke about being there?
Well, the depth is good, but it can always be better, and I think every international match for me is an opportunity to you know, bring in some more youth, bring in guys. Actually, it was during the week there, I was writing a piece, and I would love to see the likes of Kieran Frawley being put into a team that has the 14 other guys that finished or started the test match there at the weekend. You know, so, you know, bags of experience, won those big games. He's not being thrown in against a tier two nation with 14 other lads who, you know, half a dozen of them are winning their first caps. You know, you really want to see what the likes of Kieran Frawley, even Prendergast, who I thought, you know, was outstanding at certain times in the Mary game. Tom O'Toole as well. How's he going to pack down with Dan Sheehan and Andrew Porter? You know, and I think over the next, especially in the autumn, we'll definitely see a bit of that. But, you know, even in the Six Nations, in some of the games, I personally feel that there's maybe two or three positions in the field where if there is an injury, i.e. Johnny Sexton 2 weeks into a Rugby World Cup, that's then all of a sudden we're going, right, well, who's next in line? And, you know, I don't have the answer. Birch probably doesn't have the answer. I'm sure he could, you know, has his own opinion on who he thinks, you know, can fill Johnny's boots. But, you know, we still haven't found that out yet, Ruby. And You know, hopefully Andy Farrell's able to do that over the next year leading towards that World Cup.
I think the answer to fill in Johnny Sexton's boots is probably Dan Carter, and we're never going to have him either. That's probably what you're trying to replace there. But when you look at the other lads that were on that tour, you look at Nick Timoney, I thought he was great. Jimmy O'Brien, Craig Casey, you mentioned Gavin Coombs. Birch, there is plenty of lads there coming through that can keep pushing the guys at the top.
Yeah, I think, look, we're very fortunate with Josh Van Der Fleer. He's outstanding, but Timoney, you know, Stephen would have seen a lot of him for Ulster. He's been outstanding for Ulster and was brilliant in the minutes he got. Coombs is a very direct, powerful number eight, and there will be games where we need that bulk and power, particularly close in. So he did his chances, no harm. I think Frawley, go back to the replacement for Johnny, and I agree with you, we're never going to replace him, but we need to know there's not going to be a massive drop off. So let's take it for granted that Joey's number two at the moment. Harry Byrne went out on tour as the number three, or the guy that Farrell thinks could be number three. Obviously he didn't get to play because of injury, but Frawley in that second Maori game looked to be quite decent. We've seen him for Leinster play a lot at 12, and he's been very comfortable. The problem for Irish rugby now is that Frawley is probably behind Sexton, Ross Byrne, Harry Byrne, and then he's fourth in line. So that's going to be interesting. And Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster, they have to pick the best players, and I think Ross Byrne has been the guy they've gone to, you know, when Johnny's been out historically. So it's going to be really interesting behind the scenes, you know, whether Nusafora and Andy Farrell have that conversation with Leo, and maybe it's Harry is the next in line. But realistically, we would need the third choice 10 at the moment, who could very easily be the second choice or first choice 10, to be getting regular game time somewhere at 10. And that's the big thing. And that's something that Irish rugby theoretically can do because everybody's centrally contracted, but we haven't really seen it practically happen. And that could be the difference between doing something special in the World Cup or not. So that's one to ponder over the next couple of months.
So, Stephen, Birch has made a suggestion that he needs to go somewhere else. If he goes to Munster, he's going to be vying for a place with Joey Carberry. So do you send him north or west?
Well, he's always welcome up in Ulster, Ruby. You know that. Anybody, there's plenty of guys that come up the road. And we've welcomed him with open arms, of course. But I'm not sure. Like, you know, Billy Burns has been pretty good for Ulster, especially towards the end of the season. He finished the season strong. A few question marks yet again, but he doesn't seem to be in the picture for the international scene. I don't think he's going to make a breakthrough towards the Rugby World Cup. But yeah, I think you're maybe looking at the next World Cup, Ruby, for somebody like Frawley to switch across and get more game time. And you know, I totally agree with Birch. You can't select guys for Ireland if they're only playing two or three games at out half for their club, and then expect them to turn up, you know, and put it in against, you know, I don't know, South Africa and the Autumn Internationals or whoever it may be. So it's a tough one, and it's hard on the coaches. But as we have known in the past, that there are conversations going on in the background to try and get lads more game time in certain positions, and we'll see how that pans out. But you know, Irish rugby's been pretty good at doing that over the last couple of seasons. But you know, it's not just Johnny Sexton. I think, you know, second row as well. I know Hendy's didn't make the tour. I think Treadwell's, you know, really shone brightly in this tour. If you pick up an injury there, you know, Tag Burns playing a lot in the second row. But when you come up against the, you know, the big South African boys, you know, when you have the likes of Lou Dieger and Co in there, you know, you need big men. So, you know, the second row for me is also an end. Just lastly, you know, Tag Furlong. You know, our scrum has been so good in this tour. We were opened up, exposed a little bit in the first test, but apart from that, you know, if you lose Tag Furlong, then you really need somebody to back it up. And as Ron O'Gara always says, you know, it's a 23-man game these days. When it comes to match day, it's not just the boys and the starting 15 that usually win the game.
And that looked fairly evident on Saturday, Bertram. You looked at Rob Herring coming on for Dan Sheehan, Finlay Beelam coming on, Kieran Treadwell, Jack Conan, Conor Murray, Joey Carberry, Keith Earls. They all played a part when they came on. You have to have that strength on the bench.
Yeah, no, you do, and they did really well. And even Murray, from, like, he's probably not a guy to come on and chase a game, but he's very good at closing it out. And Ireland have, on this tour, were very fast starters. I just think New Zealand was a brilliant, and All Blacks was a phenomenal performance, but the this question mark is still how we can handle those joint, you know, men that Stephen has talked about. So, and whether that's horses for courses for those games. And we're going to get tested by South Africa because they're a totally different profile. They're a set-piece defence, kicking game-based team, which the All Blacks weren't. France have become very pragmatic and have those big men. So I think that, you know, the Coombs, etc., you know, may be needed for those games, the second row and the front five, the back up to Furlong. It's a different ball game. You know, the Box have a front row. Sometimes their bench front row is better than their starting front row. So, and obviously they're on our side of the group in the World Cup. So there's lots of challenges to come, and lots of opportunities for players to step up and make a play to be part of this Irish team to go to a World Cup.
And finally, before we wrap it up, lads, a lot of credit has to go to Andy Farrell. I read a line this morning in The Independent when he assembled this squad in Dublin. He asked them if they believed they could win a series in New Zealand. He didn't ask them could they win a game. His belief, Stephen, and his coaching is incredible.
Yeah, but you got to understand, like yourself, Ruby, he's a born and bred winner. Like, you know, watching him and playing rugby league for Wigan all those years, you know, he settled for nothing else apart from winning, week in, week out, year in and year out. And, you know, it's exactly the same attitude and focus towards his coaching career. He seems like the type of guy that I'd love to play for. And I remember after that terrible autumn series during the whole COVID nightmare, you know, he was saying in his post-match, you know, conference, press conferences, look, everybody, bear with us. You know, this is a work in progress. This is going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight. And everybody was like, oh, this guy's talking rubbish. You know, he's just spinning us all a reel here. You know, what's going to happen? Let's get an Irish coach in. What's going on? And then all of a sudden, as I mentioned earlier, there, it has started to click. The senior players have taken everything on board. The younger guys have been given opportunity. And I text Birch there during the week just about, you know, a few of the older heads. And he was like, Stevie, but it's Tadhg Byrne now driving this team. It's Robbie Henshaw, it's Bundy Aki. You know, they're driving the lads on. James Ryan, Josh Van der Fleer. You know, it's not like the old days where it was Paul O'Connell and Brian O'Driscoll and everybody else was, you know, looking down. You know, there's so many more other lads there that can drive this on. And, you know, it's brilliant that Andy Farrell's at the head of it, because I think the whole Irish public and fans have really got behind him now.
It looks like they have. Gentlemen, thanks a million for taking my call this evening. It was a historic win in Wellington. Hopefully we'll be having similar discussions in the autumn, where Ireland will play Australia, South Africa and of course Fiji. We're going to take a quick commercial break. After this, we will be looking back on Sunday's All-Ireland Hurling Final.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Now, just before we came on air, I caught up with Owen Larkin in Kilkenny and Niall Moran at Limerick's homecoming to talk about yesterday's All-Ireland Hurling Final. But first, let's hear from Limerick captain Declan Hannan speaking with Damien O'Mara.
Game On.
Hurling.
I know it's a collective thing and you'll add it back on the team, but for you, fourth All-Ireland as captain, you've written your own personal chapter of history. What does that mean for you and for the club and for the family and everyone else involved?
Sure, I suppose I'm immensely proud, like, to be honest, is... never in my wildest dreams would I believe anything like this would ever happen, but yeah, it's all about the group. I mean, we wouldn't be here, like, if it was about an individual, like, we wouldn't have won anything. So it has to be about the group all the time. Like, if we go into turning into individuals, we'll be, you know, missing out in big days like this. So it's not the way forward.
Yeah, and even to look at it, like, the impact the bench made, yeah, again today, and just, it was a collective victory.
Yeah, the boys came on, and when you see them coming out, you get a boost yourself, and you just say, right, get the ball to these lads. Cheers, Brian. They come on and they are buzzing around the place, and, like, you know, we see them training day in, day out, and they're fantastic players, like, and to have them and to call on there in the last 10 minutes, like, and they all come in, they all did a serious job, like, they kind of, as well, in the semi-final and the Munster final, they drove us over the line, like, and it has to be a panel effort. So just really proud for everybody, and I suppose there's a huge respect there between each other and within the panel of players. That they just do everything for each other, and that's the way it is.
I've no doubt yourself and Keane will look out from the front pages and the back pages of most papers tomorrow. Had you decided well in advance that if the day was yours, you were going to bring up for the presentation?
Yeah, like, Keane's the man. He's I suppose he epitomises what we're about. He's just so selfless and everything he does. Like, he could have easily, I suppose, sulked for the last week that he'd done so much to get back from his hamstring injury, that, you know, to be dealt another sucker blow like that a week out from an All-Ireland final. But he turned it into a positive and was there for us and drove it on a train and from the sideline, like, so yeah, I mean, it was a privilege to go up there with him in the Hogan Centre and lift the Lee McCarthy up.
Just to finish, it is a different experience, like, Croke Park rammed. For once you can bring the trophy home on the bus with you. Like, it's important to embrace this, and it's important to, I don't know, make up for the last years, or certainly to squeeze every last drop out of the celebrations, because it means so much to yourselves and everyone in the stands.
Yeah, 100% sure. Like, I mean, we obviously play it to win games, but you know, you have to have a bit of fun and enjoy it and have as much crack as you can as well when the time comes around, because it can be quite serious there throughout the year when you're being flogged back in Rakhil and you think she's January, February will never pass. So yeah, I mean, 2020, like, there was nobody here. We went home to train and went home to play, like, and that was kind of it. 2021 was, it was okay, but like, you know, today with the full house and the colour and the noise, geez, was unbelievable. But it's the way it should be, you know, for the biggest game of the year in hurling. I'm delighted it was a full house and they got a nice spectacle as well.
So they were great words there from Limerick captain Declan Hannan after Limerick's success yesterday in the All-Ireland final. But Niall Moran, I'm going to start with you, whom you must surely be in really good form. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of what happened yesterday, it was the first All-Ireland final in July. From a neutral's point of view, I just thought it was an incredible game of hurling and did the sport good. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, the game itself was it was a superb game, especially so the last 20 minutes, Ruby. It was classic, definitely classic coming down the home straight. Look, I felt maybe as if I was put on my neutral hat, I think if you were in a situation yesterday where you had Galway and Kilkenny playing, I think you may not have got as far as 70,000 spectators. I thought maybe as an All-Ireland final weekend, the Kilmacud Sevens, which is a traditional watering hole and meeting point for people on the eve of it, it seemed particularly weak. Sevens, the weakest I've ever seen it. And then not maybe to have an All-Ireland minor final before it, it probably robbed it of a sense of occasion. And I know they alluded in the Sunday game about the Jubilee teams as well. So as a game yesterday and as a spectacle for the two counties involved, phenomenal. As an overall spectacle, I think it's probably missing something of what I as neutral would adore about the All-Ireland final.
Oh, would you agree with that? I mean, I did hear the lads on the Sunday game last night, Don Logan in particular, giving out. Is that a small fault? I know we've moved to July to allow the club game to have its time and to grow. Which side of the fence are you on?
Yeah, look, I suppose it's a difficult one because, you know, when you finish up at the inter-county, kind of you go back and you see what the club is kind of limited to, I suppose, and it's a difficult one to get right on both sides of the kind, if you like. But look, the clubs are struggling. They need more time as well. So I think the conversation is going to have to be had again and sat down and discussed about, because the club is really kind of faltering. It's kind of a poor relation to inter-county at the moment. And look, everybody loves the occasion of the All-Ireland final, don't get me wrong, but I just think, you know, the club is where everybody starts and where everybody finishes, and I think that has to be at the forefront of our minds.
Exactly, it's all opinions, and who knows who'll be right and who'll be wrong. But Niall, if we do go back to yesterday, there's a great saying in horse racing where you cannot win a race at the start, but you can lose it. Did Limerick poach a lead yesterday that never gave away with a blistering start?
Definitely that blistering start. So it's one of the things that the regret that they might have had from 19 is that they were caught, I won't say caught cold, but I suppose they were maybe surprised by the intensity of what Kilkenny brought in 18 or 19. They found themselves 1-7-2 down after about 14 minutes. So I suppose the primary message would have been there yesterday was, let's put out our stalls straight away. And I suppose, look, we saw that Limerick probably for the first 35 minutes, even though they're only 4 points up at half time, they looked very comfortable. Kilkenny were kind of clinging on to be 4 points down as opposed to being within one or two. And I suppose that came from that great start. I think Kilkenny, when they do reflect on the game, they'll say, yeah, we got a superb performance, and which he did, and they're right to be incredibly proud of the team that they had and whatever else. But there was parts of that first half. I thought Richie Reid was very uncertain of his role. I think he was never really allowed to settle. He probably fell into the trap that Colin Manning might have fallen into in the first 15 minutes of the previous game. I thought Mikey Butler, maybe in some of the full back line on receiving the puck outs, I just thought they looked a little bit nervous. Even Owen Murphy, it was the first time I could ever say with hand on heart that he actually just looked a little bit jittery and getting away his puck outs. So I think Limerick, in fairness, if that positive start did nothing else, I think it probably unsettled Kilkenny until they found their mojo in the second half.
Owen, as a Kilkenny man watching that first half, did you see exactly what Niall was seeing, and were you hoping they might change things a bit quicker than they did?
Yeah, I did, because I said last week before the game, you know, if Kilkenny were to have any chance, they needed a good start, and unfortunately it happened the opposite way around. Limerick got a brilliant start, and I thought they started very, very well. In fairness, I thought throughout the first half, I was kind of a little bit worried going out through the first half, that Limerick were going to pull away, but it was just a typical brain quality performance, you know, a team performance from, you know, they just hung in there. I don't think they probably played their best hurling and got the best display or the best skill or whatever way you like to call it. I don't think they got that spot on yesterday, but they just hung in right throughout the first half and then again throughout the second half. But, you know, never looked like kicking on and winning the game. Limerick always looked really, really comfortable. Even when we got back level, you know, Limerick just went down the field and tapped on a couple of points, and we could never get ahead and put the bit of pressure that we needed to put on Limerick. And, you know, in fairness, Limerick really deserved their victory. They hurled, I'd say, probably their best performance of the year yesterday. And but look, Kenny, we're still only two points behind at the end. So I would say probably not our best performance, but definitely just, we just refused to give up and refused to give in and hung in there right throughout the game.
Well, I've heard that said a good few times now, that it was a real Brian Cody performance. You were in that camp for long enough. What does he instill into players? What belief does he give you? How does he make it a Brian Cody performance?
Yeah, I think it's just, he talks about that word spirit a lot, and you know, he talks about if you don't have that spirit, you know, when things get to crunch and they're not going your way, you know, things can fall asunder. And, you know, I didn't see that from Kilkenny yesterday, and we used to kind of thrive on that, you know, that things will go wrong, but you just have to hang in there and hang in there. And, you know, I thought that just shone through yesterday, really. You know, I know lots of people in Kilkenny were calling for Ryan Cody's head at the start of the year, and for him to step down, and he was holding Kilkenny hurled it back and all the start of nonsense. And yesterday's performance just, you know, it proved that, you know, the lads that wanted Brian Cody to stay and for himself, you know, that he knew he was the right man for the job, that just absolutely shone through yesterday. And I would have been worried. I don't think any other manager managing Kenny would have got a performance or got him to hang in as long as they did yesterday with Limerick, because, you know, Limerick are a phenomenal team. But like I say, to be only 2 points behind when the final whistle goes, not playing your best, I think that just says everything about the man.
I think that's a bit like the Manchester United fans and Sir Alex Ferguson. Look what happened after he went, Kilkenny fans. Bear that in mind. Niall Moran, obviously you had Garrod Hegarty's goal in the first half, but for all that Limerick played in the first half, were you a little disappointed or worried that they were only four in front at half time?
I won't say disappointed. You most definitely couldn't be disappointed with the performance, especially that of Garrod. He was phenomenal. He was ridiculous. His stats are like his possessions, 22 possessions, and got 10 shots away during the match. Like he was just incredible in that point. But I suppose, look, the fear was Kilkenny only found themselves 4 points down, and we had done all the hurling and probably looked very, very comfortable. And I suppose that eerie sense of, as Brian, our own, alluded to there, was about Kilkenny staying in the game. That was kind of coming home to roost by the 47th or 8th minute. But the only thing is, if we learn nothing else from Limerick versus Galway, I suppose, like the mark of champions, and Sloan knows a hell of a lot more about it than what I do, but when you win an All-Ireland final, it creates that innate confidence and that innate belief inside yourself that even when things look like they're becoming squeaky bum time, that you keep doing, you keep sticking to the process in Limerick's case, you keep plugging away. They never panicked. And like, I suppose, okay, I know the game, the lead was closed down to 2 points by the end of the game, but like Limerick scored 5 on the trot once the game drew level. And like, that is an incredible sign of champions against a team who were coming with huge energy. So, as I said, look, I didn't care what way they won it. But again, it's probably me in the trade of Limerick. If there was the one negative trade of Limerick, it's probably that maybe when they're totally dominant, that teams are still managing to stick in there. You can actually hear the train coming in behind me here, Ruby. We're just very close to Culver Station here, so there's an historic moment about to take place there.
And that was missed the last couple of years, even the after the function last night, to watch all the players and to watch them on the train now. Are you running out? Are you running away me to go and meet that train, yeah?
No, I'm not. I have a bad record of trains, Ruby. I normally wouldn't have a ticket for it, and I'd be caught on top of it. But no, that was actually one of the things that I know Declan alluded to there a little bit, but there was a massive outpouring in Limerick yesterday. Like, I suppose in 18, we had a huge outpouring for people of all generations who thought they'd never see an All-Ireland come. But suppose, like for us in Limerick, like we, like as a county, we have been kind of inducted into a unique triad of Kilkenny, Cork, and Tipperary teams that won three in a row. And like I suppose, and yeah, no one probably knows a hell of a lot more again. You do yourself, Ruby, but there's probably immortality in a lot of respects that comes with it. And I suppose when you're alive and in the pomp of your health, to be able to kind of realise that what you're witnessing is immortality, then do you know what I mean? You cannot but elude the pride that we have in our county after it. And we're a county that for a long time we struggled with our image, and I spoke to some lads earlier on, and we had a marketing campaign back in the 90s about I'm from Limerick, which was headed up by very prominent people as we tried to dispel the myth that Limerick was but Stab City. And I suppose in, as our sporting kind of fortunes have kind of improved over the last number of years, particularly in hurling, our image of ourselves and our sense of self, it has never been as high. And so as a Limerick person, irrespective of the sport, that means an awful lot to us, and they've given us that opportunity to have that pride in ourselves.
I watched them yesterday sitting on the pitch after the match, and Owen, you've a lot of our All-Ireland medals as well, and I often wondered to myself, not often wondered, I wondered last night watching it, thinking, why hadn't I done something like that on big days? I don't know what you thought watching them, Owen, but the way they all sat as a group on the pitch in Croke Park, I thought that was wonderful to see, and it kind of made me wonder why I hadn't done it. How did you feel?
Yeah, I actually thought the same thing as well, Ruby, to be honest, because usually you see that from lads that are, you know, maybe they probably know it's their last day in Croke Park or whatever, but, you know, I don't think it'll be any of those lads' last day in Croke Park, as they're, you know, they're a really young team as well. I don't think there's many over 26 or 7, so... So they took the time just to soak it all in and, you know, realise what they had achieved. And, you know, I did wonder back last night when I was watching this, you know, why didn't I soak it all in? Now, I know we had great times when we went back into the dressing room and things like that, and down for the homecoming and all that kind of stuff, but you'd love to just go back to some of those occasions and stay on the pitch and just soak it all in, you know, what you have achieved and on the place that it has happened. So... it was great to see that they're actually putting in a huge amount of work now, and you know they've, I suppose, deservedly got a three in a row, and you know nobody will ever be able to take that away from them, and it was great to see them soaking it all in.
Niall, you mentioned them making Limerick proud and losing that image of what was Limerick, but they look like a bunch of men that are great friends as well. The way they talk to each other, even watching them in the background of the function last night, watching them on the pitch, they looked like a really, really tight unit.
Yeah, and of course, again, I suppose that when you spend that amount of time with anybody, they do become your best friends, because there's very few people like who share the emotions, and it's probably more so the downs than the ups that you do when you're with your teammates. I suppose that's one of the beauties of team sports. And I suppose for these lads, like, they're going through, it's the one time, Ruby, sport, the beauty of sport, and I always say it's the one time where you just lay yourself bare for everybody to see, the world to see. You can't hide who you are, what you are when you play sport. And I suppose they realise that in each other. But just a word of, you know, on Kilkenny, Ruby, without even going into the intricacies of match play and stuff, I just thought the gesture of Kilkenny, once the acceptance speech, etc., was over, they stayed on the pitch. They stayed on the pitch for a long, long time. And I know people have been critical about Cody and what happened with Henry Scheffler and Neer, myself included, about what happened, but he led them in that. They stayed on the pitch, and we were a long time, Ruby, we couldn't win a match, and Kilkenny people never ever looked down on us down here in Limerick. They always still respected us, more so at times than our own people ever respected us. And if nothing else became apparent from what John Kiley and Kinnark and Cole have done over the last few years, it's how they've probably replicated that blueprint that Owen and his teammates and Brian and his management have had over the years, and that's respect, humility, how they carry themselves, the levels that they go to. And John, I suppose, and again, like, maybe it's the teacher in me coming out, but when you look to draw inspiration from people or whatever else, like, that's inspiration there in front of you when people are laid bare. And like, you think of Richie Hogan there yesterday, what he had to do to get back on the playing field, one of the greatest players of all time, and struggled so badly with injuries and a very harsh sending off in 19, and like that again, he was one of the last lads off the pitch offering his respect. And I just thought, to me, that was just the ultimate. And if Limerick is champions over the next 12 months, the next 12 years, can do half as much as that for, and have that kind of passed on to other counties, then, do you know what I mean, winning these All-Irelands would have been a great thing.
I fully agree with you, and that is what, to me, what hurlers or sports people should be as role models. It's how they win and how they lose. And but that was that taught in Kilkenny, or was that just expected of you to set the example that Niall is on about?
Yeah, definitely. And Brian Cody would have always spoke about that. You know, you have to carry yourselves probably better when you lose than you win. You know, because as Brian says, there can only be one winner, two teams, one winner, and someone wins and someone loses, and you could be on the receiving end someday. So yeah, you know, you have to show respect to the winners and also show respect to the losers. You know, two of them went up there to do a battle on the field, and as soon as the final whistle went, then you know the game is over, and someone wins and someone loses, and that's always what Brian Cody would have taught us. And even outside of training, outside of match days, you know, we were always told to carry ourselves, and you know, you're representing your club, you're representing your family, but you're also representing Kenny. And you know, I suppose when everyone looks around, that's what they always look for, is Kilkenny hurlers. You know, that's the blueprint, kind of, you know, what they think Kilkenny is, and Brian would be fully on board on that.
I was in Kilkenny in the Marble City when you came back 1 year and ended up in Langton's late into the night. What is going on in Limerick this evening? What's the mood like in Colbert Station, and where will the Limerick team go now?
Yeah, so look, again, Ruby, I wouldn't be the greatest man for drinking, and so any lads who know me say if he's out drinking at 5:30 or 6:30 in the evening, he'd be well home by 8:30. So
there's nothing wrong with that, by the way.
I think their plan is to come back to Culver Station. I know there was an iconic moment in '80 when they came back and taking hand and the mayor at the time. I had a great photo. I think they're on the way down to the Gaelic Grounds, and where they're expecting, I think, upwards of 5,000 people, a couple of live artists there, and if luck would have it, I think they normally end up in Amber Nightclub here in Limerick. So there's a resident DJ of 2FM there, JJ Hattigan. He's lit it up there on many occasions. So it'll be some sweatbox tonight, Ruby, with the heat that's there now. There's lads going out without the top. So what they'll be is 3 o'clock in the morning, loaded like it's full eggs. God only knows the destruction that'll be done here in Limerick tonight.
Oh, well, they're entitled to a party, and long may it last for them. Owen, before we let you go, are you more confident of the future for Kilkenny after watching them yesterday?
I definitely am. I think, Ruby, I definitely am. You know, before the Clare game, I didn't see that performance coming at all. I thought Clare would win it. I was confident going into yesterday, but I did give them a chance, and I just thought they needed to get a good start and put the pressure on Limerick and really send Limerick to the well again. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be. Limerick true champions, you know, didn't give Kilkenny a sniff. It really got a good start and kicked on. You know, as I said, Kilkenny hung in there for long periods, but never really threatened to go ahead and take the game off Limerick. But look, it'll be, I suppose, a winter of reflection and for lots of the players, and see can they drive on now for 2023. It's going to be tough with that Limerick team around, but look, I have no doubt Brian Cody now and his management team will start planning in probably a week or two to get back to the All-Ireland final maybe and get another crack at Limerick and see can they avenge yesterday's defeat. And you know, I won't back against them, definitely not in 2023 after what I seen yesterday anyway. And if we can get, you know, a better hurling performance out in 2023, we might be with a better chance of winning.
Whilst I have an optimistic Niall Moran rather than the pessimistic one I'd be talking to in March, do you see Limerick 4 in a row, going 5 in a row? Has this team got it in them? Now that you're in good humour and optimistic, because when I ask you that in March, I'd definitely say no.
Well, look, I suppose, look, in the short term, I suppose you'd be hopeful that this team might win another All-Ireland, whether it's as a 4 in a row or whether it's over the next 4 years. We don't know, but I suppose the biggest thing, and I would have said this there last year as well, like we were a very dominant hurling county in the 30s, and something went amiss in the 7 or 8 decades that came in between us. So I suppose it's very, I won't say it's very easy, but it's a lot easier sometimes, Bill, when you're down on the bottom of the mountain, or sometimes when you're at the top of the mountain, which we are now, whether we like it or not. It's the kind of the blueprint that we put in place to try and make sure that we can be like a Kilkenny, a Cork, Tipperary, and compete consistently over decades. And so that's where the challenge now lies for Limerick. And look, the incentive is there for lads outside of the panel to push on. But the one thing, Ruby, and this is sport, as soon as that final whistle went yesterday, everyone else was back in the start line for this year. And there's lads from Waterford and Dublin and all these counties who had a shortened inter-county season. They're saying to themselves now, well, we're all back level again here after yesterday. And do you know what I mean? And that presents its own challenges for Limerick.
It didn't take you long to come back, Niall. It didn't take you long to come back. Gentlemen, thanks a million for taking our call. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with golf after this.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. So yesterday afternoon, shortly after the All-Ireland final had concluded, the 150th Open at St Andrews finished as well, where Cameron Smith came from four behind to win by two. And Gary Murphy joins me on the line. Gary, I'm a big believer in starting with the winner of any competition, and that is where we'll start. Cameron Smith, two rounds of 64 and yesterday's back nine to get home in 30. That deserves to win, does it not?
Yeah, it was incredible stuff. I think probably the greatest back nine ever played in Open Championship history. It was just kind of bittersweet, really, because obviously all the home hopes were on Rory and St Andrews and the 150th and all that goes with that. So, you know, it probably took a little bit of the gloss off what was an incredible achievement. A bit like being a Kilkenny fan yesterday watching Limerick. You know, whilst they were phenomenal, you know, if you're shouting for the other team, you probably at times, you know, don't appreciate the magnitude of what he did, but it was, you know, culmination of what's been a phenomenal year for him. His third win on tour, the players was huge in March, and obviously, you know, record breaking, I think 35 or 6 under in Hawaii, and, you know, which was kind of a fun golf course, but he played that golf coming down the stretch on a major championship yesterday, and it was a remarkable victory, but just still a little bit sad for Rory, unfortunately.
I think it was too, and I felt sorry for him as he walked off the 18th yesterday. Looking at it, 2 under on the day, he didn't do anything wrong, but nothing seemed to go right for him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think his philosophy going out was probably just to kind of, you know, what we have will hold and play, just try play rock solid golf and still be able to shoot, you know, 4 under, which probably that was his mark at the start of the day, you know, which obviously would only have gotten him in a playoff. But he did nothing wrong. It's just, you know, as you know, kind of, you know, on final day, it's just those tiny, tiny margins. He just, I think, you know, didn't really shut the door. He could have shut the door properly on the front nine, which would have made it tougher for the lads looking at the leaderboard going, you know, McIlroy's got the 18 or 19 already. He's going to shoot 21 or 22. That didn't happen. He kind of left a little bit of hope there for everyone else. And Cameron Young, too, you know, has kind of been lost in the whole conversation. He got to 19. He shot 65. He had an unbelievable day as well. And that possibly helped Smith, too. They were bouncing off one another. But, you know, Rory had kind of 3 good chances on the front nine on top of the birdie on 5 that he just didn't take anything. I know he had a great 2-putt on 10, but he was kind of always just, you know, treading water rather than slamming the door shut, and that gave hope for the others, and they really took advantage of that. You know, his lead was gone through 14, having not really done anything wrong, but not produced that kind of final step brilliance that he needed to get over the line, and it'll be a tough loss for him. You know, there was a lot of pressure on him all week. He was pretty much had the lead the whole time. He was there, thereabouts. He was in the second last group, the last group. And, you know, that pressure probably mounted throughout the start of the week to get where you want on Sunday. And, you know, he's sleeping on overnight lead and all that goes with that. And it was just a little bit too much for him in the end. And he just couldn't find that magic little pill at the end to get over the line. So it'll be a tough loss for him, but, you know, it's a worthy winner in Cameron Smith. He shot 64 when he had to, and he's champion golfer of the year and gets all the plaudits that go with that.
Cameron Young and Cameron Smith on Saturday were almost reflective of Victor Hovland and Rory McIlroy on Sunday. They almost played the opposite way around. It does how your partner's getting on, the speed of the group, the humour, the flow of the golf within your group affect how you're getting on.
Yeah, I think it can at times. Obviously, Victor Hovland was very nervous going out. He looked quite kind of relaxed. I thought Rory looked a lot more edgy on the first tee, but he opened up, you know, that he was coping with the nerves, because obviously they're both very nervous. But I just think, you know, Hovland's young in his career. It was his first time in the last group with the chance to win a major. And I just think the occasion got the better of him. He learned from it. You know, as we've seen with McIlroy, when he was coming through to win his majors, he was, you know, delighted to get top tens and get a chance, and then he took his chance when he had it at Congressional. It's very few people that can, you know, get one chance and do it. And I think Hovland will learn from that. He just got a bit edgy and overcome by the occasion, and it was a disappointing 74. But that probably affected Rory too. I think Smith and Young were bouncing off one another, both making birdies everywhere, and that does make it easier, whereas Rory probably got a little protective and it was trying to do everything right. But we've seen Tiger Woods do that in the past. When he's won majors, he's just kind of been rock solid and maybe didn't have guys come at him, whereas Rory just had two guys that went past him, and you know, he could have easily have shot a 68 or 67 and won comfortably, but it just didn't happen. I don't think he, you know, he had evergreen regulation, didn't make any mistakes. He just didn't have that kind of killer instinct that he needed at certain times, and that's what cost him in the end.
When you look at his year, four majors, he's beaten 95% of the players, or over 95% of the players, yeah, that lined up in the four majors, yet he hasn't won one himself. It's incredible consistency, yet just no luck is almost the word I'd use.
Yeah, it is a little bit of luck. I mean, he's, you know, in the four majors of all the players who made the cut, he's eight shots better than anybody else. And the guy in second as well is Alec Torres, who's the second best player in the majors, and neither of them have won a major. So it goes to show that consistency is an overrated thing in golf at times. He would gladly have taken three missed cuts for an Open Championship yesterday, but unfortunately it doesn't work like that. He's been in the top 10 in all his majors. He's had a good chance in three of them probably, and it hasn't happened for him. But I think last week was a positive for McIlroy in the sense that he was there the whole time. It's a long time. It's probably Hoylake in 2014 where he's had 4 days of intense major pressure, and he really didn't do anything wrong. He just got kind of taken over on the last bend type of thing, and I think that's the way he should look at it. It is a big gap until next April at Augusta, but that's probably not a bad thing either. But I think he should be very proud of his performance. It's just the fine line between winning and losing is huge, and he's only there to win. You know, second doesn't matter to him, and that is the tough space that he's in. But I think it was a fascinating championship as a whole. St Andrews was a success. I think the course held up pretty well, considering the conditions. I don't know going forward. The pace of play was a huge issue Thursday, Friday. The course, maybe he can't manage 156 players. They might have to look at shortening the field because, you know, the pace of play with the double greens is a big issue.
It was, but I must say it was really enjoyable television for the last 4 days. Gary Murphy, thanks a million for taking my call. That was about the only low point I found in the weekend, was watching Rory walking off 18th, having not won. I was hoping he would. We're out of time, I'm afraid. I'm back tomorrow evening. Tara Kumar is up next. Thanks for listening.